And on to some other big political questions. Do we need a recovery from the recovery? Are the Democrats on track to overhaul health care? And what about the president's week of summitry? Well, joining us, as usual, are columnists E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution and David Brooks of The New York Times. Welcome back.
Thank
you.
Here.
Let's start with the recession and the recovery. E.J. first. There's a lot of talk about the need for another economic stimulus and whether there's the political will in Washington to pass one. What do you make of it?
I think the short answer is right now there isn't the political will. I think the president probably wishes that the first stimulus had been a little less bipartisan and a little bit bigger. There's a case to be made for doing more, particularly for all these state governments that are having to cut programs and raise taxes at the same time, which is about as anti-stimulative as you can imagine. If we ever get a second stimulus, that's where it's going to come from. But I think the administration's view is this isn't played out yet. There's still a lot of money to be spent. And I think when President Obama went to Rome today, he was probably praying that something happened to pick up this recovery a little bit.
David Brooks?
EJ wants it partisan and profligate. I guess I don't. I wish it had been timely, temporary, and targeted, to keep with the alliterative theme. The problem with the stimulus is it wasn't designed to happen in 2009. Most of the spending is happening in 2010. And so it wasn't really designed to be stimulative because they thought the economy would be growing along nicely by 2010. The problem now is even if you did pump money into people's pockets, people are so scared they're just not spending it. So it's not clear we can stimulate in the short term anyway.
People might pay off their credit card debts, sure.
Or save it.
The savings rate is way up.
An odd thing that would be. Let's talk about health care reform for a second. David, do you hear in the announcements of cost-cutting commitments and arguments over a public insurance fund, do you actually hear the makings of a potential sweeping, effective bill on health care reform this year?
Not effective, and maybe not sweeping. This has certainly been the worst week they've had for passing any kind of health care bill because Democrats basically can't decide how to pay for it. A lot of us are more concerned about the second issue, which is lowering health care costs. The growth of health care inflation, to me and I think to a lot of people, is the core issue without which we cannot have reform. It's squeezing the middle class. It's destroying jobs. It's bankrupting the country. And there has been a bipartisan consensus not to seriously tackle that issue, not to control what's being spent, and not to control the treatments that are offered by people. And both Republicans and Democrats are completely in agreement on this. And as a result, we'll probably get nothing that controls costs.
Controlling costs, EJ, means telling patients you may have to pay more for insurance. Doctors, you may have to make less. Hospitals, you may have to do less. Insurance companies, you'll have to profit less.
Well, I think we don't have to drown in David's sea of pessimism there. I think that what you've got are a lot of ideas floating around that are still very much alive about paying doctors in a different way that create incentives for savings, using research better to know what works and what doesn't. So I don't think we are at anywhere near the dire point that David suggests. What you've got now is a House bill and one of the Senate bills that's reasonably close to what President Obama wants. And then you've got Max Baucus on an endless negotiating
session.
He's
the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee.
Right, correct. Thank you. On an endless negotiation with Senator Grassley, he wants this bipartisan bill. The Democrats are trying to speed up Baucus so they can start putting something together. But where I agree with David is I think the schedule has slipped from where Democrats and the White House wanted it to be, and they're getting a little bit worried.
Would you agree that when a party has the White House, the House, and 60 votes in the Senate, that they ought to be able to pass a major piece of legislation?
Yes, and I think that gives them some leverage over Democrats who might be reluctant to vote for this, that they can say, look, we have all the power now, at least in the eyes of the public, and if we don't deliver on this, we're going to get punished in the next election, which is coming up very soon next year.
I think they'll pass something. I'm not sure it'll be that big or that universal, simply because a lot of people in the Senate want to tax employee health benefits. A lot of people in the House just want to tax the rich. Those are two very different approaches. But just finally on this comparative effectiveness, on the idea that we should measure what works, all the bills have that. All the bills do not force people to actually follow the results of that, and that's where the costs are going to rise.
Okay, last item. EJ, you wrote a column this week about President Obama's meeting with Pope Benedict XVI, in which you said that the Democrats of Barack Obama stand to the right of the Pope on economics.
Right. I mean, the Pope issued a very powerful letter on social justice and the economy in which he said things that Democrats would never dare say. He talked about redistribution of wealth. He said we needed a world political authority, that those are his words, to oversee the global economy in the name of the common good and solidarity and subsidiarity. And he sounded a bit like Bernie Sanders, if I can say it that way, when he condemned corruption and illegality in the conduct of the economic and political class in rich countries. Now, clearly, the Pope isn't to the left of Barack Obama on everything. And when he met with him today, the president met with the Pope, I thought it was very significant. The Pope gave him a document on the life issues and a document on his document on the economy. Critical. It was sort of the yin and the yang of Catholic teaching, to the right of our consensus, in the, if you will, on the life issues, and to the left on economics.
He was offering him cafeteria Catholicism.
No, he was offering him the full deal.
I see. David, I'll leave you a time for one theological note.
Well, my theological note is going to go a little Protestant. It's the 500th birthday of John Calvin, a central figure in American life. He created representative government by disbelieving in unified power. He created capitalism by inculcating self-discipline. He created American exceptionalism by giving us a sense we were following God's will, a major figure who should not be ignored on his 500th birthday.
Happy 500th to John Calvin. David Brooks and E.J. Dionne, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.